Not many weeks from now, we Americans are going to get a plan. It's a plan that's going to come to us from the representatives of 16 countries in Europe. We expect that they will tell us what they can do to help themselves. And we also expect that that plan will tell us what they need in the way of help from us. Help in money and help in products. Now, when we get that plan, Congress is going to debate it, and after it's been thoroughly debated, we Americans shall have to come to a decision that should represent the wishes of the majority of American citizens. I doubt very much if at this very moment any of us Americans can say just what we think this decision is likely to be, or what it ought to be. For one thing, we need to know just what Europe wants from us, what Europe expects from us. And for another thing, we need to weigh the cost, not only in dollars, but in effort and in sacrifice by us Americans. Now, some of the factors and some of the questions that are going to go into this question of cost, we propose to discuss on this broadcast.
You are listening to Sterling Fisher, director of the NBC University of the Air. With us in our studios for this broadcast are Senator Tom Connally, Democrat of Texas, and Senator Carl A. Hatch, Democrat of New Mexico. Both Senator Connally and Senator Hatch are members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. On this program, Our Foreign Policy, they will discuss with Mr. Fisher some of the questions to which we must find some sort of answer, whether we decide to help Europe or whether we decide not to help Europe. To continue, here is Mr. Fisher.
Well, we Americans have already given tangible evidence that we are taking an active part in the struggle to reconstruct the world. For example, we have authorized a loan to Greece and Turkey. We have proposed a grant to Korea, so far not approved, it's true. We have loaned money to Great Britain. And these actions and other actions like them indicate that we are concerned about the problem of constructing the world again. We are concerned about the preservation of democracy. Now, what assurance have we Americans that we are not just pouring money down a rat hole, that we are not just making piecemeal attempts to get the world on a self-supporting basis? What would you say, Senator Connally?
The United States is willing to contribute within the limits of her resources to help reconstruct the war-shattered countries of the world. The things we've already done, some of which you mentioned, were of an emergency character. It cannot justly be claimed that they are piecemeal measures. Europe must not depend upon the United States to solve all of their problems or feed all of their hungry and grant money to rebuild their economy. They must exert themselves to the limit.
I think there would be some justification for the criticism that our measures so far have been piecemeal, but not pouring money down a rat hole. I don't agree with that expression at all. If these measures had been presented, and did present, an entire picture, but they do not, I think they all form a part of a general pattern which is being developed and which looks toward a complete program. The so-called Marshall Plan completes the pattern and rounds it out.
Well, Senator Hatch, let's assume then for a moment that Americans are prepared to see a complete program of aid for Europe clear through to the proper end. Isn't it nevertheless going to hurt us to some extent? I mean, aren't we Americans going to have to make sacrifices? Won't there be need of some self-discipline? Don't you agree with that, Senator Hatch?
Well, without question, if the entire program now under process of formation evolves, it will call for considerable sacrifices on the part of the American people and some discipline. It will mean not only further advances of money, but more important, perhaps, it will call for continued exports of commodities, manufactured products of many kinds essential to our own life and especially to our own economy. This may mean shortages, but I do not think they will be too severe. Perhaps the greatest upset will come from the creation of an abnormal situation in supplies, markets, and prices.
Senator Connally, don't you think that the amounts in goods and money involved in relief measures will have to be governed by circumstances?
I think that amounts in goods and money involved in any relief measures we undertake will be governed by circumstances and conditions which we cannot predict as yet. We certainly cannot abuse our own resources and dislocate our own economy by extravagant relief plans.
Well, Senator Hatch, you have just said that we Americans must expect to have to make sacrifices if we're going to help Europe properly. Do you think that these sacrifices we will be called upon to make will force a change in our own American political and economic thinking? And is it possible to give any estimate of the cost to us in terms of money?
Well, answering your second question first, Mr. Fisher, the cost in dollars cannot even be estimated at this time. Before we can count the cost for ourselves, we must know, and this is important, what contributions can be made by other countries, and what those countries we are helping can actually produce themselves. Until the complete facts are assembled, any estimate of the cost would be the most extreme sort of a guess, one I do not care to make. As to the first part of your question, the only way I can see how a plan to aid Europe could or would affect our political and economic thinking would be this. Would such a plan involve more or less government regulation of exports? I mean by that how much or can or should be exported and the proper distribution of those exports among various industries. If government regulation is involved, it would mean for the time the plan was in operation, a substantial change in pre-war methods of business generally. This is one of the things to be considered in the light of sacrifices for any restriction or regulation upon our free system of transacting business at home and abroad does mean sacrifice for American citizens.
Well, Senator Connolly, I wonder if you would settle this important matter in a good many minds. Do you consider that we Americans are preparing for any program of possible aid to Europe on a genuinely efficient basis? Now, by that, by efficient basis, I mean this. For example, the 16 nations are meeting in Paris now to work out some kind of a plan to present to us. How far do you think that this joint enterprise of those 16 nations should go towards, let's say, a European Federation of Nations? And do you think that Europe could cooperate for the necessary length of time to make any plan for its own reconstruction really effective?
I'm not sure that any pending plans are the best and most efficient for meeting the present situation. We have already helped a number of countries with loans and gifts. We have sent to Europe more than $14 billion in loans and grants since the war came to an end. We not only have loaned money to Great Britain, we've made a large loan to France, we've made a large gift and grant and loan to Italy, and we have also made grants and loans to other of the countries of Europe. Through UNRWA, we expended $280 million American dollars in aid and relief, much of which was not appreciated, and many of the nations used their own resources to maintain strong armies while using our relief funds to feed their civilians. Nations demanding aid from America must not spend their resources in maintaining armies. It would be desirable for the nations of Europe to join in an international pool to work out their own relief plans as well as receive such aid as we may give them. I do not mean by that they will likely form any political union in Western Europe. I have grave doubts as to whether the nations of Europe can be made to cooperate sufficiently to make a joint plan work. I think it would be well for the nations of Europe to join in extending help to other nations in Europe without depending upon the United States to do all of the relief.
Of course, Mr. Fisher, many things Senator Connolly has said, of course, is entirely correct, especially about the loans we have made. And at the moment, thinking in America and thinking abroad is not clear. It is more or less muddled. All of us at home, I think, are convinced that the rehabilitation of Europe from an economic standpoint is essential to the peace of the world and is absolutely necessary to prevent the complete collapse of whatever free governments may exist there now. But yet, until we know definitely what those countries can do and what we are called upon to do, we cannot have clear-cut and definite thinking over here. Therefore, we cannot yet make the decisions which will lead toward definite goals and objectives involved in world reconstruction. Abroad, there is also, in some places, perhaps too many, much muddled thinking. For some countries still look on America as a land of such bounty and such plenty that all they have to do is to sit down and profit from our generosity. That is most muddled thinking, for is not the thought of the American government or the American people. We want very much in this country to help those who show a disposition and a willingness to help themselves. Thinking abroad must be straightened out along these lines. Events in the last several weeks indicate that at least in some countries, this point is being driven home. Some countries are showing a desire to do all and everything they can.
But Europe must take the initiative by helping herself, not only by just drawing up a plan. And she must go the limit in that regard. She must go to work. She must save and strive. We should then be better able to judge what action we shall take.
Well, Senator Connolly, do you include Russia in any such plan which calls for self-help by Europe?
Russia's attitude is such as to offer no hope of her joining any such association of European nations as we have been discussing.
Well, suppose a plan to reconstruct Europe can be agreed on by us Americans and by the nations of Europe. And suppose it is successful and Europe is reconstructed. Do you then expect Senator Hatch to see the revival of a free market?
Well, Mr. Fisher, it is always most difficult to predict as to the future. There remains so much yet to be done. But I, for one, am hopeful that there can be such a revival in Europe, that free markets can be restored. In expressing this hope, I am looking ahead to the long years to come. I do not expect an immediate revival of free markets and a free economy in the world overnight. That will not happen. But I myself shall cling to the ultimate goal of the reestablishment of free markets throughout the world. I might add here that with the right kind of cooperation from Asia and Europe and Russia, the recovery all of us so greatly desire could come far quicker than my remarks may indicate. The length of time involved will depend in large part upon the way the nations of the world cooperate with us and with each other.
Well, I think perhaps, Senator Hatch, more depends on that than we care to face right now. For one thing, it seems to me there is the question, this question. Suppose free markets are not reestablished. Can we continue, we Americans, with a free economy in a world that is trading under governments, governments which have instituted a measure of control? Senator Connolly, do you think a reconstructed Europe will bring back a free market?
Not immediately, Mr. Fisher. In Europe, politics and economy and all of the business and commercial matters are so interwoven and intertwined that it is extremely difficult to disentangle them. It is to be hoped that a free market in Europe will be revived in the period of Reconstruction. It will be difficult to achieve that, and because of radical animosities and restrictions on trade by the Eastern and Western European bloc.
Well, of course, Senator, what many of the governments of Europe face now is the aftermath of that pre-war period when fascism succeeded in winning adherents at the expense of some of the democracies. Fascism brought about the war and left Europe starving and without industrial hope. And now, Europe is being urged to turn to communism as the solution of her problems. What have we in America to offer that will convince them that our type of democracy is a better alternative than communism?
Mr. Fisher, the thing that has been lost in Europe, or wherever there is a fascist or communist regime, is individual freedom. There is a complete loss of individual freedom under fascism or communism. Freedom of the individual is the thing democracy offers. It transcends everything else. For without freedom of the individual, there is no liberty for any people. And the history of the world proves that misery and want and destitution follow wherever freedom is destroyed. We cannot grant liberty and freedom to any people. That is a thing they must achieve for themselves. But by cooperation and economic rehabilitation, we can aid the people of the world once more to turn to the democratic way of life. For time will prove that in peace, even as in war, their great help came from peoples who lived freely.
We have much to demonstrate to Europe the fallacies of fascism and communism. The chief difficulty is that European nations have not the background or the traditions that the people of the United States have. We achieved our freedom and independence, but it took 700 years of fighting for the Anglo-Saxon people to achieve parliamentary government and free democratic institutions. We can help demonstrate their fallacies by reminding them that the United States is prosperous and progressive after sacrificing more tremendously than any other nation in the war as to money and resources. Every department of industry is successful and advancing. These results have been obtained under a constitutional democracy with the utmost freedom of the individual. They were not reached through totalitarian systems or police states. That thing Europe must learn.
Senator Connolly, do you consider that we Americans are able at this time to offer what we might call a democratic manifesto that will appeal to Europeans in their present struggle for the control of Europe?
That may be possible, Mr. Fisher, when the peoples of Europe come out of their post-war excitement and confusion and chaos. There is no reason why we should offer a manifesto of any kind to Europe. We advocate our own system of government, but European nations have a right to adopt their systems. We can set them examples, but we cannot enforce them.
Well,
we cannot coerce them. We cannot successfully intervene in their internal affairs.
But, Senator Connolly, some of those systems seem to many Americans to be falsely branded as democratic. For example, several communist masterstrokes of policy in Europe seem to have been accomplished in the name of so-called democracy. What, in your opinion, is the difference in our definition of democracy and theirs?
The so-called democracy of totalitarian states is not democracy at all. It is mobocracy, directed by an individual or a small group who dominate or control the masses.
Go ahead, Senator.
They must study and understand our democratic system before they can realize its blessings.
Well, so far, Senator, we've been discussing the reconstruction of Europe, but Asia, of course, is involved in the picture also. What do we want to see happen in former dependent areas in the Far East, in Asia? What support can we offer those areas?
We shall not make a success of trying to run the whole world. We have adopted liberal policies towards China and toward Korea and other countries in that area. We should probably lose our own great destiny as the one great democratic power in the world if we scatter and diffuse our resources and ideals among all the nations.
Now, Senator Hatch, while we are on this question of trying to reconstruct the world, just what political efforts has the United States made to assure peace? Are these efforts proving effective, in your opinion, could we do more?
The greatest political effort the United States has made is in taking the initiative in trying to organize the nations of the world into a strong international association for the purpose of preventing war and to provide a means of settling disputes and differences by peaceful, lawful methods. I speak, of course, of the leadership at Dumbarton Oaks and in helping to create the United Nations organization. It is too early yet to say what these efforts, or that they have been effective, or are now effective. Setting up the organization with ourselves as a member is in itself an effective start. True, it has not functioned as we would have had it function, nor has it achieved the results, all of them, that we had hoped for. The use of the veto power and other obstructive methods have not been good. But it must be remembered that the task we have undertaken is a tremendous one. It has not failed. Our efforts, regardless of the tactics of any other nation, must be continued, and even with greater strength, as obstacles arise.
But when you say, Senator Hatch, regardless of the tactics of any other nation, I am sure that Russia comes into the minds of many persons listening. To a great many people, Russia represents the transfer of power from the middle class to the working man. Now, Senator Connolly, do you see any threat to our own middle class in that fact?
I do not consider that there is any threat to the middle class in the United States. They may be outvoted now and then, but fundamentally they still have their voice and a vote in the field of public affairs.
Well, do you consider, Senator, that it is correct to say that the struggle in Europe represents a conflict between a police state such as Russia and a liberal socialism as represented by Great Britain? Hasn't Europe put aside as unworkable a fully democratic concept, if we may call it that, such as ours, namely free enterprise, a minimum of government control, and an economy based on private industry?
The struggle in Europe today is largely a conflict between a police state system as it exists in Russia and her satellite states, and a moderate socialism such as exists in Great Britain. France, while it has not adopted nationalization of industry, is more of the British type. These nations have not abolished free enterprise in the whole field of industry, but have nationalized only certain particular industries. We cannot superimpose on the nations of Europe our political views and systems, nor do we want to do so. Each nation has its own traditions and background, and Great Britain and France, with their moderate socialism and liberal political views, are a fortress against totalitarianism and the police state.
Well, of course, Senator Connolly, a good deal of the struggle that you spoke of is at this time psychological. Now, in this psychological warfare, Russia seems to be on the offensive, and we, perhaps, are in some places on the defensive. What can we Americans do that will put us on the offensive, if that's where we should be? What have we to offer that will put us on the offensive, Senator Hatch?
Mr. Fisher, I do not like to think or speak in terms of offensive and defensive. My own thought is simply this: for us to do everything we should do and let the results speak for themselves. I do not mean we should hide our light under a bushel. We can let the whole world know what we are doing and why we are doing it. I am utterly confident, however, that if our nation does everything she should do, the results will speak in such a loud voice that we need not greatly fear the psychological warfare being carried on by nations which seek to force their will and their form of government upon other nations.
The United States has a system of national information which is designed to acquaint other nations with our views and concepts of government. It is calculated to contribute to better understanding of our government and political ideals so that the nations of Europe may properly understand us. This process of information is going on now, but you cannot forcibly coerce some nations into seeing and knowing the truth. If the nations of Europe want to know the truth, let them reflect upon the fact that in the war which had just come to an end, the United States entered that great struggle, gave tremendous financial and resources to other nations, gave up the lives of hundreds of thousands of our most gallant men, and came out of the war without any demand for reparations, any demand for territory, any demand for indemnities. Doesn't that look like we've got a pretty good system, and can't the people of Europe see it? Then when the war came to an end, and when they were broken and stricken, when they were devastated by the war, The United States opens up her treasury and pours out not millions, not hundreds of millions, but literally billions of dollars to come to their relief and aid. Can't they see that? And if they do see it, can't they profit by the example that the United States has set before the world?
Now, Senator Hatch, let me ask you this. Don't we risk the charge in trying to help the world of economic imperialism?
Well, Mr. Fisher, I, for one, am willing to meet that charge at any time or any place. In the first place, it is false and untrue. I am willing to grant that by ensuring a democratic way of life to other people, if we can do that, we might secure some economic advantage for ourselves. But economic gain is not the goal or aim of America. It never has been. As a matter of fact, the huge sacrifices we have made and probably will be compelled to continue have and will cost us in actual dollars and cents more than we can ever receive in return by way of money. But if other nations will accept the democratic theory of government, if they will grant freedom to the individual, if they can work out with such assistance as we can give them their own economic recovery, if they will adhere to the principles and theories of the United Nations of settling differences peacefully and without war, our gain in being permitted to live in a world at peace stands as the goal of every effort we now make. This is all that we ask of other nations. We do not seek political or economic control over any nation or any people, and that is what imperialism is.
Now, Senator Connolly, a very vital question. What do you think can be done about atomic control?
If we cannot secure international inspection and safety requirements as to atomic energy, there is nothing left for us to do but keep the secret and make such use of it as our national interests may require. If Russia insists on her obstinacy, there is no other possible course we can pursue. There is nothing else that we are called upon to do.
Well, Mr. Fisher, you asked earlier if it was correct to say that the struggle in Europe represented a conflict between a police state system and a liberal socialism. I have not answered that question, and I should like to answer it now. Your statement is correct. Such conflict does exist in the world. But I want to add that the reason for the downfall of free enterprise in Europe is due to the wars in which the world has been engaged. Eliminate war, restore economic recovery, and the democratic way of life and free enterprise will return. Fight another world war, and our own economic way of life will be so threatened, disaster may well result to the free enterprise of even our own country.
That was Senator Carl A. Hatch, Democrat of New Mexico and member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Together with Senator Tom Connolly, Democrat of Texas and also a member of the Senate's Foreign Relations Committee, and Mr. Sterling Fisher, Director of the NBC University of the Air, he appeared on this program to discuss the costs we must consider in any program of aid for Europe. Next week at this time, we bring you Mr. Samuel Reber, Acting Chief, Division of Western European Affairs, Department of State, and Mr. Harold Van Buren, Cleveland, of the Division of Investment and Economic Development, Department of State, in a discussion of the present critical position of Italy. Printed copies of these broadcasts are available at 10 cents each in coin. Write to Our Foreign Policy, Box 30, Station J, New York City. These broadcasts and the reprints of them are used by the nationwide study groups of the American Association for the United Nations as a basis each week for study and discussion. Our Foreign Policy brings to the microphone each week members of the United States Department of State and other government officials, members of Congress, and officials of foreign governments in discussions of the problems of foreign policy. Our guests on this program were Senator Tom Connolly, Democrat of Texas, and Senator Carl A. Hatch, Democrat of New Mexico. This series is coordinated by Murray Dyer. Kennedy Ludlam speaking from Washington, D.C. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.